one of the things that I found funny about our species, we're just peculiar in this one way, or in multiple ways, but this one in particular. We'll come into a beautiful place, and we'll see, you know, elk out here grazing on the meadows, and a fox like chasing a mouse or something and diving onto this thing, and we look out and we see bison up on the hillsides, and this, you know, off in the distance, these beautiful mountains and all this stuff, and we go, hot damn, I'm gonna live there. And so we live there, we slick it off, we subdivide it, and then we give the subdivisions names like Elk Meadows, you know, Fox Meadow, Bison Hills, you know, Mountain View Estates.
In memory only.
Yeah, what are we thinking? So, you know how some albums, some music albums, and some stories have multiple different titles, you know, and they can't decide on just one title, and so they give you like three things that you could call this particular thing. It's really annoying. But I'm going to do that to you today. So this is living alongside our environment. What the heck are we thinking? Ignorance of the land and how it operates and how we operate within it. So use what you will. We love our environment. We're all talking about it. We all love to be in it and on it and through it and all of that. But as a species, as a society, we tend to like to dominate it too. You know, we come in and, man, we put our stamp on it. We insert ourselves into some pretty awkward places. And I'll touch on that here in a minute. We like to insulate ourselves from the inconveniences and the discomforts. Well, we sure love it. And hardy souls such as ourselves are out on a day like this, coming out into the environment. But oftentimes, we see folks in their little climate-controlled pods racing down the road to their next climate-controlled pod at their residence and things like that. So we like to smooth things out for ourselves. We're pretty gentle creatures in that way. And so we do that, and we take ourselves away from it, from the sensations of it, and we isolate ourselves a little bit from the rhythms that are going on around us. I'm going to go back to some solastalgia. So I grew up in Ozark, Missouri, which is in the southwest corner of the state of Missouri, and it's just north of Branson. If any of you have ever heard of Branson. For those of you who haven't, it's where country music stars go to die. And it's a pretty intense place. So you got the beauty and serenity of the Ozarks, the hills, the hardwoods, it's a gorgeous place. And so then Branson decides that, well, we're going to capitalize on country music stars. And so they will literally, they're not afraid to use dynamite there. They will blast the top of a hilltop off, slick it off with the dozers, take a pointed hilltop, take it down and, you know, push all that debris out to flat, put a parking lot on it, put a facaded country music theater up there, and they'll rake in the devil. I mean, it is commonplace down here. It is, we are on this landscape and it is ours, bam. So it's a pretty powerful thing that I saw growing up. And the changes that were occurring, and so it goes back to everything that you were saying at the last stop. I won't remember all four of them at this moment. So that's kind of that dominating example. That inserting ourselves in awkward places, we establish permanent infrastructure. In landscapes that are constantly renewing through their natural disturbance processes. The landscape, to keep healthy, has to renew. It has to have disturbance. That disturbance freshens it. So this landscape right here is a fire landscape. Fire burns through here. It's going to reset this. Sagebrush is going to go away. Trees are going to go away. And it's going to come back into grass forb species. And it's going to work its way right back up to this, if left alone. But we like to put our homes and our permanent infrastructure within these environments. We build in floodplains all the time. Because it's great, we've got riverfront property. In fact, pay me more for that, you know, than what you would do elsewhere. So we do that. We build on the coastlines and the natural disturbance processes there, and hurricanes and tsunamis. They're there. They're supposed to be there. They're supposed to do what they do, moving that sand in, moving that sand out. We build on steep slopes that are prone to movement, and whether that's mud or rock or snow slopes, we'll build on them and say, look at my neat place and the view that I got as the house is sliding off the hillside, you know. And in this part of the country in particular, fire landscapes, where this is fire is the natural renewal disturbance that has to be here for a healthy land. But California is a good example, and we're all seeing that on the news here right now of these crazy fires that are burning through there, and it's doing what it should do. It just doesn't fit our needs, our timelines, and things like that. So the way that we've, and this goes back to maybe what we were talking about at the first stop, the way that we deal with some of that stuff is to kind of overcome it. We use our technology and our collective abilities to overcome that. And so we do things to circumvent those natural disturbance processes. We fight wildland fire. Who in the hell thought that was a good idea? We don't fight tornadoes and hurricanes, but we sure will go out in front of a fire and steer that thing and try to put that thing out. That has a consequence, and that consequence is what you actually see on the landscape here. Mm-hmm. These conifers wouldn't be here if fire were burning through here. This sagebrush wouldn't be here in this density if we allowed that to happen through here.
And actually, just to add to that as well, and I know you're familiar with this, at one point this was all mixed grassland. So these trees are really a result of logging, not allowing fire, and a variety of other sort of climate-related deals.
Yep.
But at one point, yes, mixed grassland, and much of Montana was.
Yep, exactly. And if any of us were to be plucked from here right now and what we know of Montana today, and plucked and put back at the very beginning without the influences that we've been able to do since our settlement, we wouldn't even recognize the place. It would be wholeheartedly different. The stuff that Lewis and Clark saw, very different than what we're seeing today. But we don't recognize that. We recognize what we see today. Oh yeah, that hillside should have that many trees on it. The tree should come back far down the hill, but, you know, get left to its own devices.
And you do remember that Hyman Rickover suggested we use hydrogen bombs to stop hurricanes.
Yeah.
True.
Really?
Truth.
Yeah.
Wow. Navy Admiral.
We like our technology and our engineering.
I don't know if it was fake news, but I read that the Chinese are launching an artificial moon.
Really?
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
They're calling it the Death Star.
Beautiful city, always.
Illuminated.
Well, at the same time, that's bizarre. At the same time, China has been making some, I'm thinking Harvey Locke's recent discussion, making some huge strides and establishing, I think, one of the first national forests in...
No, national parks.
National parks,
there are all
parks,
sorts of,
sorry,
of in, yeah, local places. But there's a follow-up to that story, and it came out about 2 weeks ago that... because of the fact that they are now all the way down to a 6.5% gross national product growth, that all of those programs are now imperiled because of the effect on the economy.
Yeah.
It's not because of them. It's just the effect on the economy. The fact that they're kind of reaching the cap part of capitalism, where now workers are saying, you know, we ought to get paid more for this, you know, and this kind of thing. So now that
the funding for the programs are...
That's right. Yeah. Funding for the programs are in danger, and therefore the whole thing could collapse.
Huh.
Story of humans.
Nope.
One of the more grim stories.
Yes.
So a few of the other things that we tend to do to mitigate the awkward places that we build. We build dams and alter streams for flood control. Let's take a stream and straighten it. Let's put the dam up, you know, control the flooding. A river needs to flood. That floodplain is there for a purpose. It's an integral part of the function of that biotic system And so we build there. It doesn't fit to have it in our basement or our first floor, so we have to make it operate differently. We shape land and engineer stabilization to stave off landslides. So, you know, you just start carving flat spots on a hillside. I live on one of them on the face of Mount Helena, you know, go figure. And then the other thing is we control our personal environments for our comfort, and that's, you know, climate control, lighting. We shouldn't have lights 24 hours a day, but we do in a city, and we as a species can then operate 24/7, and we kind of pride ourselves on that. So, you know, those are some of those sorts of things. So really what it kind of boils down to is we're becoming a bit out of tune with what's going on around us. So we're living a side of, you know, B-side land and the land and the rhythm of the lands rather than within it. We're saying, I don't like that it's dark, you know, for certain periods of time, so I'm going to change that. So how does that work for us? How does it work for the other species out there and those sorts of things? And we do see negative effects to other species because of our changing it and stuff. So just a quick few examples from a career here. The other day, actually, I had a guy walk in to our office, and he was from outside the area, had just moved to Montana, and was instantly dominating the land. He came in and said that, you know, we built our house, and we took a D7 dozer, and we came in, and we slicked all this area off, and we did this, that, and the other. We built a pond, and we did all this different stuff, and I was like, well, what the heck? He had only been there for a few weeks, but that was something that he thought, this is what the landscape needs. Mm-hmm. He wasn't there long enough to get a feel for what was going on there. And so we talked about fire behavior and how he had built his house where the fire would likely come from.
Whoops.
You need to start thinking about these sorts of things, you know. So anyway, he was out of tune. I used to work on the Black Hills National Forest, with the Forest Service, and was a fuel technician there and a firefighter. One of my jobs there was to work with the folks in Spearfish Canyon. I don't know if any of you ever know. No pretty place. It's a canyon right there on the north end of the Black Hills. And had old mining claims up and down the creek. Those claims got sold off over the years, and people built their houses on these little claims. And what the claims are is, I mean, they're literally shaped like little wedges and little pieces over here and, you know, whatever. It's little triangles or little rectangles. Well, in between all of that is Forest Service ground, Forest Service administered ground. These people would come in, they'd do whatever they wanted to do on their place, put their house in there, and they're actually building in a spruce habitat. And what a spruce habitat is known for is high productivity, so it makes lots of woody material, lots of needles, lots of cones. Shallow roots, those trees don't have to go very deep for water because they're in this bottom, and so they can blow over very easily. The fire return intervals of that particular forest ecosystem is a very long fire return interval. And what that means is that it's natural disturbance of fire, it can come back every 300 to 500 years. Well, that's a lot of time for those fuels to build up in that sequence, and then when it burns, it's catastrophic. You cannot stop it. It just goes. It's also got the topography, wind, and all that stuff to help it just roast that thing out. So here are these houses built in this place that they really shouldn't be built in. And they call me on the phone and say, when are you guys going to come clean this mess up? So how do you work with that, you know? They're out of tune with where they're living. And then one that's really funny, I was out hiking in glaciers years ago now, in 97 or something like that. Hiked up quite a long hike. I think it was up to Swift Current or something like that. Mm. Anyway, as I'm hiking up, I hear this rustling in the brush off the right side of the trail, and I thought, oh God, I'm going to be reincarnated as a bear turd. Yeah. I thought for sure there's a bear in there, and I look, and it was a moose. And I was pretty excited, you know. But I gave it wide berth, said, you know, hello, and took off, went up, did my hike. So this is in the morning. Do the hike, come back down. It's now later in the afternoon, much later. And these folks are coming up the trail, and they've got their flip-flops on, t-shirts, and shorts. No water. It's family, you know, husband, wife, and some kids. And they come up and they say, "We heard there was a moose up here." And it was like they expected the thing to be chained up in a place that they could go and see this moose, you know, like the only thing they were missing is the Mickey Mouse ears. You know? So.
Or Mickey Moose ears.
Mickey Moose ears. And so there again, there's that other, you know, just kind of out of tune with what's going on, you know. So anyway, as we talked about before, we've utilized and manipulated our environment for survival. Up to about the Industrial Revolution, we were doing that with natural things. We used wood, we used water, we used, you know, minerals from the earth that weren't, they weren't significantly altered. So when we abandoned that, it went back to the earth, it returned. With the Industrial Revolution, World War I and World War II in particular, wars are great for advancing our technology. We began better living through chemistry and technology. And so we were told, do this, buy this chemical, do this, it will make your life easier. Even in something as simple as household cleaners, we were told that, oh, don't use, you know, vinegar, baking soda, those sorts of basic things. You got to have our powerful cleaner, you know. So we're being steered further away. And instead of being in the landscape or alongside that landscape. And so now the stuff that we create is it's synthetic and it's having negative effects. Things like pharmaceuticals, you know, technology. If you were to leave your phone out, it's probably got, you know, all sorts of heavy metals and stuff in it that aren't good for the environment. Building materials that we use anymore don't get back to their original existence. And one of the big things that we're probably hearing a lot about right now are plastics and how they're so pervasive, even getting through the cellular level of it, through the tissues, not just into our digestive tract, but actually getting into our cells and tissues. So that's pretty crazy. So I guess the gist of it is we're part of the system. We just have technologies that support us that can really negatively affect what's going on around us. And so we also have the ability to live within our environment if we choose to. It's just not always as profitable as living alongside it. So if Marie were here, we'd be talking about biomimicry a little bit.
Yes, we would.
Reusable items, recycling, things like that. But we generally don't look at those sorts of things, like I said, because of economics, the instant profitability, and also our ego, in that we feel like our technology is going to solve any environmental problems that we create or that come up. In fact, I worked with a guy who once told us that, "I'm not too worried about it. Our technology will fix it."